Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
All right, welcome everyone. My name is Kirk Sander. I'm your moderator today. I'm the Chief of Staff and Vice President of Safety for NWRA. A lot of you I do know because you serve on the Safety Committee for NWRA. If you're not, why not? And please join. These are our speakers today. Sean Mandel, Vice President of Safety with Waste Connections. Kevin, I'm going to go across on how they're sitting on the table. Kevin Fitzgerald, the Director of Safety with Recology. Celine Hoboy, Vice President of EHS and Compliance with GFL Environmental, and Romeo Vellatini with Waste Pro USA. So with that, what everybody told me on this session was this isn't supposed to be like where we all sit there and drown on about what's going on. It's supposed to be more of a engaging conversation with the panelists, what's happening. We do, if you have questions, there is a mic here. I'm not going to save questions for the end. I'm guessing you're all safety professionals. You're probably not shy because you're the safety professional. You have to say stuff. So if you have a question, come up, ask it. We're going to make this a little more interactive because I know I'm keeping you from dinner tonight. So we're going to try to keep this snappy and keep going. So the first topic I want to cover, lots going on, especially being we're in Vegas, is heat. Heat awareness. OSHA has made it a high priority of their regulatory agenda. They've not only started the regulatory process, they've also asked their FACA, NACOSH, National Advisory Committee on Occupational Safety and Health, to form a subcommittee to look at what OSHA is doing. And with that, OSHA wants to move fast, so 3.5 years. The average OSHA regulation takes 7 years, so 3.5 years is fast. So with that, who wants to open up on what you're currently doing, where you can see it going? I mean,
good afternoon, everybody. For us this year, especially with OSHA's new initiative on the National Emphasis Program, we're trying to just go back to basics. We're talking to our supervisors and our frontline employees, asking them to put the OSHA heat tool onto their phone, something we talk about it year after year, and yet I can go up to employees and ask them if they understand the heat index, which is really vital in Florida. We have a lot of days, only 90, 92 degrees, but with the humidity, we're you know, running like Las Vegas at 110, 112 degrees. So we've really pushed that. The other thing that we're really doing now is just emphasizing the humanity of the entire situation. We're very lucky. We've worked hard on this the last 5 years, and we only had a few events last year. And when we root caused them, it came down to drivers often pushing helpers really, really hard, especially new helpers, temp helpers. So we've endeavored to really sit down with all of our drivers and talk about that type of behavior to make sure that they understand that it takes some time to acclimatize to working in the heat. We're doing just kind of verbal tests our supervisors do with the supervisors, with the drivers, to make sure that they understand the signs and symptoms of heat illness, that they understand how important it is to get them into the shade, you know, pull over, put a hose on them, call for medical help right away. So that's kind of how we're attacking.
Thank you, Romeo. That's excellent. And I think just keeping it in front of people. So we actually just sent out our May newsletter. And in the newsletter, we had the information about heat stress. And, you know, we go from Canada to Texas. So people don't think about heat stress and heat issues when you're, you know, in those colder climates. But that's where you can really be impacted even more so, because people aren't used to it, right? It doesn't take much for them to get impacted by heat. It doesn't have to be super hot to be impacted by heat, right, at the end of the day. So just making it so that it broadens the awareness for everybody. We actually did have a heat illness last year, and we reported it to OSHA. And so we did go through an investigation and identified similarly that folks just had been pushing too hard, didn't expect the weather to get that hot during the day, because that's the other thing about this time of year I find, too, is you leave in the morning, it's still cool out. You might have, you know, in the 40s or 30s even, and by the middle of the day, you're up into the 80s already. So it can fluctuate, and that's another thing we try to stress. When it gets to the real summer, it seems like folks have already paid attention enough. But it seems like it's the spring and early summer we see a lot of that. But we try to encourage them by purchasing those like freezer pops. We have a lot of different things with electrolytes in them, and they're there. They're available to them. We have little cooler packs we give as giveaways for everybody so they can keep their cooler in the truck all summer. So, you know, beyond just kind of making it something we talk about, we try to visually remind folks as well. So.
Yeah, I would agree. Us here in our operation extends from Seattle all the way to San Francisco Bay Area, Northern California, and down into the Central Valley of California. So year-round, we deal with the high temperatures. We've already started seeing some of the over 90 up into the triple digits in our operations that we have in the Central Valley. That's our compost operations. And more recently, due to the shift, and especially in the variance of climate in California, a lot of the places where we would feel relatively cool year-round, especially like San Francisco with its own microclimate, we are now experiencing higher temperatures regularly. So we're having an employee population that now must deal with not being acclimatized to those environments, and now having to see it as well. Seattle's another one, the Pacific Northwest, they're becoming warmer earlier and earlier in the year. And to kind of touch back to what Kirk was saying about, you know, OSHA taking on a more forwarded look on it for the regulation, California and Washington State have already been there with that. So we've been living it. Oregon is working on their own right now. They have a proposal right now, which is similarly mirroring Washington and Oregon, Washington and California. So trying to align our companies to three states already has kind of been a challenge. But, you know, my background is we're doing it. Previously, I was in the railroad industry. So we were already having to comply with California and Washington state standards for heat stress and illness for employees working in the field. So it's just a matter of alignment and education, and then bringing that forward, just have, as you said, having that dialogue earlier in the year. It just seems like, you know, it used to be now we're gearing up for summer. Now it's like, okay, the snow's barely melted, talk about heat, but it's still snowing outside as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it was hot one day and cold the next.
Right,
mm-hmm. Right. No, all great points. And Waste Connections, we take the approach, we have a summer safety awareness campaign each and every season. It kicks off with our executive team, kind of signing a commitment banner and a lot of communication around it. We have a specific day that it kicks off, and we found that it really is just about awareness. To Romeo's point earlier, a lot of people, you know, will be in 80 degree weather and they're like, oh, it's not that bad, you know, for lack of a better term, garbage person mentality, right? Just kind of push through it, not realizing that 80 degrees in Texas when you've got 70, 80% humidity, the heat index is significantly higher. And so it really is about awareness. It's about education. We unfortunately had a heat-related fatality in 21 involving a relatively new employee. And we found out that he actually had a history of heat exhaustion at his previous employer. And of course, our folks understanding that once you've experienced that a heat illness, it makes you more susceptible for reoccurrence. Even those type of things that the group in here is probably saying, well, yeah, Sean, that's common sense, right? It isn't. We need to ensure that our folks are aware and educated to those type of hazards.
So Sean, you're setting up where I wanted to go next on not only, you all can help try to control what happens at the workplace, but we all know your employees come in. How do you, when like Memorial Day, make sure they're not coming in dehydrated? Or how do you get that message out that effect? I mean, I know when I was a college athlete, what happened on Wednesday affected how I played on Saturday. Right. So how do you get that sort of that thought across on?
Sure. Yeah, we talk about, hydration throughout the course of the year, and we really kick it up beginning in April. And then, of course, throughout the summer months. But to Kirk's point, we try and educate our folks that what they do outside the workplace can often have a pretty significant impact to them in the workplace. In other words, if they're out, partying like they're in Las Vegas at Expo and try and run a residential rear load route the next morning, they're going to find themselves in a world of hurt. And so what they do outside the workplace, things like a well-balanced meal and getting the proper rest and ensuring that they understand the signs and symptoms so that they can not only watch out for themselves, but they can watch out for their coworkers and teammates.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to go up and down every time. I mean,
well, no, just talking about that. Previously with Recology, we've done systems discussing physical well-being. The importance of stretching before rigorous physical activity, and the buyback of that is it touch in these things is that you could take these things home. They apply universally. So, this idea of, well, you're just worrying about me because you want me to perform well while I do my job. Well, it's like, well, I want you to perform well as a person and individual, because you'll do better at a lot of things. You'll be happier, you do other things. So getting that message across is like where it stretches into saying, hey, think about it on my behaviors and my risk factors extending in when I exit the workplace, helps build that culture of safety. And it is really important, because if you can break down that barrier, then you have a more engaged workforce that is really wants to be involved with safety, think about safety, and not saying, okay, I'm just repeating the lines, I'm watching the video again or watching the presentation. It's like, okay, what can I pick up this time? What can I do differently the next time?
So, I was going to pivot a little bit on what you said earlier on geographical distribution, because one of the things with the OSHA regulation coming up, they want more innovative ways on how do you enforce heat? How do you know where you are? And one of the things that popped into my head was the USDA plant guide on where different zones on how you plant your plants. Mm-hmm. So, and what really stuck out to me, there's this spot in sort of like North Carolina that has the same climate as Vermont. And so how do you use that to then say, okay, I mean, you're not going to kick off you're going to kick off Florida, but you're not going to kick off Vermont yet for another month. So what can we take back to OSHA to say, we don't want it to be April 15th, we're going to start enforcing heat when Florida's already
should be doing it year round.
Right, yeah. but at the same time, Maine or Vermont or Washington State is off. So it was sort of more what can we go back to OSHA on sort of that geographical distribution that's going to actually make the co-shows and area offices think a little bit more?
Well, I'm going to go to that for just a second, though. I wanted to pick up on something that you said that kind of goes to all of this, is you said athlete.
Right.
And these guys are really athletes that are in the truck and on the back all day long. And so that's another reason why having these conversations and relating them to the fact that maybe they were athletes in high school or college, or they really are athletes today. And I think that's really important to kind of point out. And it might help them be more relatable, to your point as well. With regards to the geographic, I do agree. I think that, having the conversation to let OSHA know that, they have to be cognizant of that is going to be really important. But at the same time, we do get such fluctuating swings in temperature. I think you got to talk about it April to November. I mean, it's almost going to someday be a year-round thing for some locations, and for some areas maybe it's a little bit less. But, you know, then there's those days where our folks might be really ready for a really cold day and it gets warmer, and now they're over-dressed, right? So then how do you deal with that? So I think there is probably a need for conversation year-round anyway, but I do think bringing that up to OSHA will be helpful.
I guess I'll be the fly in the ointment. The older I get, the wackier the weather seems to be to me. I get how we want to go geographical, and everybody said, hey, Florida ought to have it year-round. I have to tell you, it's very odd. Florida has not had that many 90-degree days in the central and northern portion this year. Normally, previous years, we were popping 90 degrees the end of February, definitely all throughout March, and we finally got our first 90-degree day late in April. So those, I think there has to be a common sense component. Maybe we can kind of pick out some areas. It was just last month I went to Waste Pros in 10 southeastern states. I was in Charlotte, and it was great. And I came down to Atlanta further south, and it was freezing. It was like 40 degrees, and it was 80 in Charlotte. And then by the time I got home to Florida, it was like 65. It felt a little better. That just kind of gives me some pause about figuring out. I think with the wild weather, we're encouraging our people to layer clothing a little bit because it can be so wonky at times throughout our footprint. And I think we have to stress a great deal of common sense if you go with that geographical approach.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I found interesting, for those of you that may not have caught the heat illness piece that OSHA did here last week. I'm not sure who sponsored that. It may have been the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
But they was had mentioned how they
the
had, yes.
Yeah, that was OSHA. They were in comments.
So they had mentioned how they had heat-related fatalities, worker fatalities, in 35 states. And even as I look at Waste Connections history and the tragic and unfortunate fatal that we had in 21, we're in 46 states, 6 provinces in Canada. We're all over the place. If I were to tell you that this occurred in Missouri, didn't occur in Arizona, didn't occur in our sites in Texas, didn't occur, where people would traditionally, wasn't in out of Houston and so forth. It occurred in Missouri. We really need to ensure that we don't sort of, pivot and say, well, we're going to wait until it gets above 80 degrees and the heat index is X and so forth before we roll it out. We should be talking about it all the time. It's really just about basic wellness, right?
Yeah, I would concur with that because, thinking back in my career, I can name on one hand all the heat-related injuries I've investigated. And, heat was a contributing factor, but the main factor in it was a lot of it was, dehydration, diet of the employee, and that contributed to it. So big conversation went into that to talking about water consumption, use of energy drinks, and yes, and having that conversation about it. So just having to have the employee think smarter about it, and having a dialogue around it. So it's we want to touch on that common sense thing, but I say this as being a former regulator myself, is that unfortunately common sense does not necessarily play into the regulatory process, which is unfortunate because it would solve so many problems. But that's just the thing that this is the conversations. It's like these are the conversations I would have, and it's not like you can have a silver bullet to fix everything. You just got to be creative and think about it and be adaptive to the circumstances and be willing and open to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on. So the next fun thing, these things. What are you seeing? What do you think we can do?
No, but with the, you know, like the prevalence of electronic devices is there, you know, everybody likes their toys. Everybody wants to look at it, but it's, you know, it went from being like, distraction, you know, looking at, you know, accidents looked at, like people, you know, they're talking on the phone, they're trying to dial, they're running the red light, they're getting hit, or they're text, you know, they're doing something else and they don't see the indicators and they cause a significant accident. But now, you know, the distractions I'm seeing as related to electronic devices are not necessarily like I need to make a phone call or I need to send that text message, but now I need something to keep me from falling asleep. So keep from falling into a repetitive pattern. So like you're out there collecting, so you're running into patterns or you're doing a long haul route and you're looking at things like I need to have music on. I need to be having something visual, you know, going all the time. So now it's like, now that distractions is, it's noise, it's, they're thinking about something else.
And are these your drivers or
no, these
personal
are,
vehicle drivers?
No, these are, you know, personal vehicle drivers. These are, these are conversations, we see when we, talk to people. But that's where, like the big thing now is, you know, okay, now can I have my car drive for me while I can play with my electronic device? So that's the thing. So that's where we're going. So it's like, how do you remove that from that temptation from use of it and put something else in front of them that is more instructive?
I say, what's the Amazon show where they go to the guy dies and then goes into a...
Oh, Upload?
What?
Upload?
Yes, where he died by hitting a truck.
So I came into the garbage industry about a year and a half ago from the medical waste industry, which also we had trucks. But these trucks are much bigger. GFL's trucks are much more obnoxious color, right? They're green. We have lights. We have all kinds of things, and we still get rear-ended. There was a fatality. There was a guy who had a brand new pickup truck who ran into the back of ours and rolled several times. I mean, I don't know if there's some way to... the other thing, too, is I think people have become much more impatient. I don't know if it's through the pandemic, but, like, people will not wait till a safe spot you can at least pass, even though it's still a double yellow line. But they're uphill, and they're trying to pass you, and there's another car coming. And it's really... I now understand much better why it's such a hazardous industry. And I don't know if that's something that we can start education earlier. Like, are there some sponsorships or some kind of funds that we can find to provide training to, like, you know, put it into driver training and driver education at the driver schools, that, like, garbage trucks are, and, you know, I'm sure the post office has a similar complaint.
Post office, tow trucks,
yeah.
Construction.
It's just anything, you know, because people just want to get around. They're not willing to wait for it to be safe.
Got to give Peggy Messina's credit. Indiana did get it into the driver training for the state of Indiana to specifically call out waste and recycling trucks. So.
I mean, there's a Geico, or is it, which one is the Mayhem guy, right? I mean,
Allstate.
Yeah, Allstate. And there's a garbage truck in the commercial. I'm like, seriously, people, like, it's a garbage truck, right? Like, am I wrong here? So it's not just distracted, it's impatient, it's, the devices are one thing. I saw a person reading the newspaper on their device in traffic the other day, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, why? So I think it's beyond just being distracted. I think it's being impatient. I think it's just folks not just slow down, right, and take the time to get to where you're going. But and we've seen many of those, and I do have to say that the cameras are helpful for that. So whatever camera system in truck, in and out of the truck viewing is definitely helpful. And it's helpful to help the drivers too, because sometimes it is not their fault at all. I mean, they are not.
Sean sent me a video where I mean, the guy was standing there, and next thing you see is car runs right into it, and luckily the hit the can and not the person. And
yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of those where someone's rear-ended us, and thankfully the person that was that would normally be operating the rear load was not standing there. They'd have been gone too, you know. So it's I think that might be part of it, is that it's beyond just distracted. Mm-hmm. Everyone's in a different kind of a rush, I feel like, in the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, I would agree with Celine. It's, you know, the onboard event recording technology, and it doesn't matter who the manufacturer is. I think they're all, you know, really good. But they now have come out with machine vision and artificial intelligence. So literally it can tell when our drivers have their head down or have this up or they're beginning to doze off. It'll give them both an audible alarm in cab. And so we've seen a significant reduction in the distracted driving from our professionals. But to my colleague's points, it is an epidemic out there with the unprofessional driver. And I remember, you know, 20 plus years ago, sitting in meetings with Jim Olson and Don Slager over at Republic, and him talking about wanting to put, you know, the light packages on the back of those trucks in such a form and fashion that it literally blinds the drivers coming up on them. It is a Christmas tree. And yet they still seem to be able to run into the ugly GFL trucks or, you know, our trucks with the yellow on the back.
Or,
sorry.
I mean, it's almost that fire engine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Romeo, having driven and lived in the I-4 corridor, I mean...
Oh,
yeah, I wish I had a magic bullet. I've not seen a product that stops commercial drivers from using a phone. I think it's all about education. You know, like Sean says, we're using AI to identify our drivers who are habitual phone users. And part of the relearning, re-education thing for them... We're not a zero tolerance company, so we'll work with people if they show a desire to change their behavior. But part of what we do is we're consistently compiling more videos than we can really blur up, you know, to protect people's faces on I-4. Through Florida, it's like a disaster. I'm afraid to go to work every day, everybody. We've compiled a bunch of accidents of people hitting us, and I mean some really brutal accidents, up to including probably kind of what Sean showed you. We saw an alarming event last year in Volusia County, right on the I-4 corridor. A driver and a helper, kind of backdoor service, bringing trash from an elderly couple's home. They were standing in the middle of the driveway, at least 10 feet off the street, and a distracted driver came hauling butt around a corner like 40 miles an hour, looked up and saw our truck, spun the wheel to the right, and hit both of our employees in a driveway.
And they're not in us. They're thinking they're in the driveway. We're
Yeah. I mean, if I was standing in that driveway, I'd sit out a easy chair and watch the world go by. You would think that you're okay, and I don't think you are anymore. But our drivers are starting to get upset about the times that they've been hit, and the times that they or their helpers have been hit by vehicles when they're out of the truck. So we're trying to educate our drivers to say, hey, this is a problem. You all see it, it's getting worse. Don't be a part of the problem. Back away. Don't be distracted. And when you get out of that truck, you really have to watch it. This is one subject that keeps me up at night.
So I do have to say there is a engineering control on this. It's patent 8706143. That was granted to Apple in 2014 that will, they say will stop a driver from using their phone, but will allow anybody else in the car to use their phone. And if you're on public transportation, we'll also allow you to use your phone.
So where is it?
They've never deployed it.
I don't mean to veer us on another kind of topic, but related to this whole idea of the drivers getting out, trying to provide good service, and my point earlier about people getting a little crazier, we've had 3 shootings in the year that I've been at GFL where people have shot at our employees or at our truck because they're angry about their garbage. Like, what's going on? I mean, really, like, they just last week was one of them, and we don't really understand, but I think that's another conversation, too, that we should be having with our folks about their own safety and just recognizing, like, if you have a hostile environment, to not engage and to not get involved in that conversation. But it's quite, this is a public service that we provide, and it's kind of scary that, you know, do you not want your trash picked up? Like, you're that upset? I mean, I don't know. But anyway, I don't know if you guys have had any kind of experience like that, but this was kind of a new one for me for the last year to have 3 shootings.
I mean, within my first couple weeks at NWRA, I mean, I got it. Was it Sean, you sent the video of the grenade getting exploded in a baler? But I mean, this is a whole nother level. But
okay. No, because I agree. That was, you know, when I first came on board at Recology, and that was back in 2021. And one of the first things I saw identified our risk was our, you know, we talk about, you know, one of the first concerns my team said about is we don't have a, you know, we want a more aggressive, you know, active aggressor program. But part of that is like, you know, you're worried about the outside threat coming in to your facility, and like thinking about that, you know, we had some shootings in California, one of them which was on the YouTube campus, which is not far from where we service, and we're in San Jose, which wasn't far from our facilities at the VTA facility, which was for light rail. And so that hit close to home, but then you start thinking about the interactions we have. It's, you know, as you said, getting back to the last 2 years where just been a change in behavior is.
Well, and I wonder if people are like, we're home, like, so they're working from home, they're home more, they're frustrated. I don't know. It's just,
you know, customer pickups, customers have become more aggressive, or you have to engage with members of the public who, you know, who do not appreciate you being there, or may have mental challenges, or, you know, need, you know, of their own, and are just taking out aggression on the closest person to it, just happens to be the person collecting the bin or the cart. So we went and developed a de-escalation program to provide, you know, scenarios to our drivers, to our employees for customer service, to say, here's a scenario, what are the things you can do not to escalate the situation, because we don't want you to get in a physical altercation, we don't want you to get assaulted, or God forbid, you know, be shot at, you know, but, you know, how do you remove
He got punched first and then got shot at. So, you know, I mean, it was,
yeah,
we didn't have a good de-escalation day.
You know, and it's just, you know, these are things now we have to start thinking about, and, you know, bring in that, you know, emotional intelligence portion to it now that we're taking to our workforce on how to read people, how to read the situation, and, you know, kind of seems to be the common message here is like rounding out the culture of the employee, you know, not just at work, but in all aspects of who they are, just because of the risks associated with work.
And I think we need to recognize what we've gone through over the last 2 years. There's a professor of neuroscience out of Stanford that I've been following lately, and he talks a lot about the, human impact that this pandemic has had on society. And people have, unfortunately, are put in stressful situations that, you or I can certainly deal with. We understand what, our own internal de-escalation approaches that we can take. But we're seeing more and more where they can't deal with it. They've just undergone so much from a societal standpoint Really interesting studies out of Stanford, and I'm sure there's several others. But we need to educate our folks. I really like what Kevin's doing there, Recology, on educating their folks on how to de-escalate those situations and even being aware of the environments that they're in and looking out for those potential hazards. We had a driver recently up in Northern California, as a matter of fact, who there was a homeless individual that was around. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. He's out servicing. He gets out to pull out a front load container, and the gentleman gets in a cab and takes off with his truck, right? And unfortunately, those things happen with some regularity now.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I don't want people to be shy, so.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you've brought this topic up, because we're so used to talking about the backing issues and right-hand squeezes, right? And what we're starting to see in the data is this very significant uptick in shootings and violence affecting collection workers. And it's customer-related, but a lot of it isn't customer-related. Somebody got shot in San Antonio, Texas last week. Last year or the year before, I can't remember, somebody went into a convenience store to get a Big Gulp or something and got killed in the convenience store, right? So situational awareness.
And the Baltimore one, too.
And the Baltimore one, right. I should have remembered that one.
It's in our backyard.
It's in our backyard, right. And I actually did safety training in Baltimore 2 months ago, so I apologize, Baltimore. But this is an issue that we have to deal with. And one of the things that we have to remember, and Sean, you touched on this, is the last 2 years have been incredibly difficult. I don't think it's just COVID that's been difficult, yeah. But there are now 100 million more guns in the United States than there were 5 years ago, right? Yeah. That contributes to the general chaos we're seeing out on the street. And I think we have a responsibility to our employees. You have a responsibility to your employees to try to give them the tools to address those situations. But I'm glad we're having the conversation, because it's one that we typically don't have when we get together to talk about safety. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up, Dave, because I really did feel like it's not a discussion that's had. It's not on the radar, but it's just seemingly happening more and more. We've also had break-ins at our facilities where people realize now that you have electronics at your facilities, and there's tablets and phones and, you know, that kind of stuff. So we've had more break-ins recently. And, our drivers and our employees don't go to all the only posh places, right, where they pick up grandma and grandpa. Like, they go to areas where it's pretty sketchy and difficult to deal with. And I really, it's something that I'd love to see more of your program. It's something that we're talking about. I mean, literally, we had to put a new category. We have a system where we track all of our incidents, and we had to put a new category in that was like security and work, you know, not workplace violence because our people are violent, but because they're being, you know, having to deal with those circumstances.
Well, just to even touch on that, like, because of the number of incidents going up, you know, just to get back to your point, it's like the need for also providing mental health services to our employees have gone up because of the number of incidents we had, like not necessarily incidents directed at our employees or our employees interacting, but just things that have spilled over that just happened to come into our facilities or be handled by our employees. So it touches on them. So you have to provide now, start thinking about mental health services, training, all these things that before we may have not thought about.
What other big things? I mean, Celine, you brought up the shooting. Security, one of the things, ACES, it's DC, we have thousands of associations. ACES is the security professionals, and the now head of that used to be the head of AIHA. And so I was having a discussion with him about how many companies are moving EHS under security. So that seems like maybe we're going the other way where we're bringing security under EHS.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing, because there's not really anywhere else for it to go unless you had like facilities maintenance, I guess. But yeah, I mean, that's at Stericycle, we kind of saw that. And here at GFL, we're starting to see
that too. That might be another way is I can reach out to him because he comes from the AIHA background. He understands industrial hygiene, but then he also is doing the security stuff now. So it could be a...
Yeah, I think you're referring to the American Society of Safety Engineers, and they've got some good stuff.
This is
ASSE as well.
No, this is ASIS. So it's for security professionals. Mostly, it's more the gun-toting, knock-em-down, personal executive protection. But they're seeing more a rise of the people who are in charge of that in companies getting the EHS function. So yeah, no. Also ASSE. They're on this, but this is a whole acronym city.
Yeah.
So what you were gonna?
No, I was just gonna say, you know, we talk a lot about the confined space and lockout tagout and hazard communication and so forth, and now we're getting to the point where we're talking more and more about workplace violence and how to de-escalation of situations and situational awareness from a hazard recognition. You know, if our drivers are in an area and there are individuals in that area that they just feel uncomfortable, we're empowering them to call that time out, continue on. You know what? I can't remember the last time I had a complaint about somebody's trash being stolen. We'll get it later. It'll be there, right? And that's kind of the approach that we're taking.
Well, and more now we have ASLs and vehicles where your residential is going with one person instead of two, possibly three, right? So where they might have been feeling a little more like, you know, you have someone that's secure and you can get through those neighborhoods, they're by themselves.
Yeah.
And they still have to get out of the vehicle. It's not like it's completely automated. So, I think more... conversation, just having the conversation and raising the awareness, just like we do training for everything else that's regulated. This is one where it's not regulated, but it's super important.
So speaking of that, or Romeo, did you?
No,
go ahead.
Everything's fine?
No, we're a fairly large company, and I'm surprised to hear how much you folks have encountered, although we've had, nobody shot at any of our employees, but we've had... three in the last year or so that have had guns pulled on them, and it was a frightening situation, so much so to the point that I would never have thought, I probably wouldn't have gone down the road, but in this particular part of the country where these all happened, I just hired a former police officer. He's the right temperament to be a safety guy. He cares. He's very engaged. He led a whole lot of safety initiatives, but we're just quietly getting him to the point where he's going to develop an active shooter program and some other things like this. I love the de-escalation. He can probably do that too, but it's a sad state of affairs to get to that point.
And you're dealing with the ubiquitous Florida man.
You know, that's the thing that I don't want to talk too bad about my home state, but we have so many crazy things happen there. And hearing about all of this, and everything's calm in Florida. It's all good. Yeah.
I mean, having lived there for 5 years and having to deal with some of that, yes. So speaking of training... Oh.
We have one question. Hi. You guys are huge companies. We're a small... relatively small hauler. We have 60 trucks, about 90 employees. Where do we start with getting programs going? I mean, this is the first I'm hearing about shootings and violence. We haven't experienced that, thank God. But where do we start to train our employees? What are resources we can go to bring this into the light for them?
The last year at the Expo, the Board of Trustees for NWRA agreed to work with the National Safety Council to build an off-the-shelf safety program for companies to start. And so we're just in the final stages of reviewing that, and that'll be coming out. The other thing is join the NWRA Safety Committee. If you have questions, send them to me. We send them. I mean, the amount of times that questions go out saying, hey, a member has this question, what do you need? Or we had a call out, what was that?
sharing those ideas. Right. What do you think?
I mean, we had the call out. Someone was looking for roll-off training. And next thing I know, I have 15 different roll-off trainings from different companies that are saying, hey, send this off to them. And within that, somebody else then asked for it a couple weeks later. And so there's that good sharing and communication. That's it. And then...
Well, and I mean, if you're talking specific to this type of scenario that we're talking about up here, I would recommend that you reach out to your community liaison at your local police department. They tend to be really, that's kind of their job, and they'll come out, they'll work with you to identify what your needs are and help give you some information. I've worked with local fire departments before. I've worked with, local police departments in scenarios where, that kind of support is available.
And this suggestion might sound a little scary. Call OSHA, because they have a compliance assistance program where they will, each state has, so like in Pennsylvania, it's in Indiana University of Pennsylvania, which from my alma mater is just really sad because it's our rival, but that's another story. So they have colleges and universities who do this training. They come out, if you're in the compliance assistance program, they will go through and say, okay, this is how you need to do to have a safety program. And as long as you're in that program, working through that, you can't be cited. And so, I will say, if you tell them to pound sand because you're like, I'm not gonna change it, you really have to tell them to pound sand about 10 times before they'll cite you. And you have, I mean, so they really want you to fix it versus, yeah. So what state are you in?
New York.
New York? Yeah, so I'd say call the New York area office. Are you upstate or downstate?
Mid.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so talk to them, and if you don't get anywhere, call me, I'll call Rich, and we'll get it taken care of.
So I just wanted to offer a suggestion to that as well. This topic is so timely for us. I'm with the City of Birmingham Public Works Department, and we've had 6 incidents in the past 7 months of citizens pulling weapons on our drivers and collectors. And just this morning, I was on a conference call trying to facilitate de-escalation training at the end of the month, but we were working with the city, the employees' mental health provider. So we're working with so we were talking to a counselor, going through how we wanted that training to look. So we used our BHS or employee assistance and the counselors provided through that in order to set up a training so that we could help design something. So this is, it's brand new for us. Would love to hear, because you mentioned scenarios and role playing and things like that you put in front of your drivers. That's what we want. But like I said, this morning before coming here, we had that conference call because of the escalation of these incidents in our area, just the most recent one 2 weeks ago. So it is a real forward, very big issue that we're facing right now.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. So we just have a couple more minutes. I'm starting to hear some murmurs. Sounds like people, either you're making your plans for dinner or you're...
From about 2005 to about 2010, there was a lot of publicity and a lot of success stories about Waste Watch. I believe that was Republic's. I haven't heard anything about it since, but that was a very successful program. And it taught our drivers and anybody that's out on the street to look for signs, look for clues. You didn't have to interact, you just had to observe and report. And I think what we're talking about here is an extension of that, that we team up with our crime prevention officers and teach our folks about situational awareness and in-service trainings and toolbox talks anytime, any chance we get for that.
So Dan, how would we reach out to those with your former colleagues?
Almost every police department has neighborhood officers, crime prevention officers, neighborhood liaison officers that will go to the community meetings, they'll go to business watches, churches, houses of worship. I'm glad that you mentioned, as is international, we're teaming up. We have a Cincinnati chapter teaming up with the Ohio Crime Prevention Association on crime prevention training, and CEPTED, which is crime prevention through environmental design, can very, very easily be adapted and added the personal safety for our employees, not just out on the routes, but also in the facilities. like you said, people are breaking into facilities and there could be someone in there. So de-escalation is a key in recognizing those signs of personal safety.
Yeah, we have emergency preparedness for tornadoes, but we don't always think about emergency preparedness for an active shooter necessarily, oh, you know? So
yeah, that hits very close to home.
Yeah, yeah. And I love your shoes, Dan. Those are fabulous.
They come with batteries. Thanks.
Sweet.
Thanks, guys.
You know,
dispose of them properly. Sorry.
Right.
I think you hit on it there. We talk, you know, about, you know, emergency preparedness for tornadoes, but not active shooters, you know. But, you know, as, you know, I was thinking this earlier, it's like more and more is like safety is now touching on a lot more security, things like that. It's, you know, business continuity, almost like we're all bleeding together. And, you know, it's, you know, and I work with our information technology team a lot, and they're always identifying risks. Like, what are our risk exposures and everything? And now it's like everything, I just feel it just more and more comes together where we're just all working on the same sandbox now versus in our own separate things. So we got to start thinking that way in regards to risk and then how they touch upon each other and where they overlap, because the more we overlap and identify those things and with training and conversations and engagement, especially with like outside the organizations, is where we're going to have the strength to protect our employees and success and, you know, build those programs that you're looking for to start from the ground up.
More and more, we're responsible for our own safety, our own facilities, and our own people. That you can't just wait. There's a famous saying that when you need a cop in seconds, he's only minutes away. And that means so much when it comes to active shooter, when it comes to personal safety and defense. And so it's something we need to address. I know there's a lot of things and a lot of checklists and issues we have to cover all the time in in-service trainings, but this is something new to consider. Thanks, guys.
Thank you all for attending.